We've got the second book here.
Okay, great.
I'm not up to that one yet, but. Okay.
How do you find your schedule then? Is it on your schedule in the evening?
Yeah. I'll write it out for you after the show. I just don't want to.
Yeah, don't worry.
Yeah. Okay, so we're on Daf Chaf Amud Beis. Oh, thank you. Where did I leave it?
near where you said it, but.
Okay, thanks. Okay. So we were discussing a parsha in Sefer Shmuel, and it's a big machlokas about this parsha. The parsha is called Parshas Melech, and after the people come forward to request the king, Shmuel gives them a whole harangue, a whole presentation in which he goes through all the powers of the king. Do you remember this? Mm-hmm. The authorities of the king. And the Gemara here on Daf Chaf Amud Beis presents a controversy about how to understand that parasha. What was Shmuel's intention in the parasha? According to one opinion, which is the opinion of Shmuel, not to be confused with Shmuel HaNavi, but Shmuel the Amora, he says Melech Mutarbo, meaning these are the laws of the king, these are the authorities, the scope of his sovereign rulership, and he has the rights within the halacha, even lechatchila, to pursue and implement all these rights. For example, he can conscript people to work in his palace, he can take women to work in his kitchen, and he can confiscate people's property. He can conscript people into the army, even for a melchemes rishus. I mean, these are all mutarbo. This is what the melech is allowed to do. Rav, on the other hand, says, no. That's not the way the melech should act. But Shmuel, the Navi Shmuel, had in mind, la'ayim aleihem. He wanted to put the fear of the Lord in their hearts, meaning be aware of how far the king could go if he decides to use his powers. This is not l'chatchila what he should do. He should really only use these powers in absolute emergency, when there's an urgent situation. But nevertheless, Shmuel was a little bit put off by the fact that the people wanted a king. They requested a king because they wanted to be like the goyim around them. And Shmuel said to them, look, I want to warn you. La'ayim aleihem. Let me warn you about, it's not such a simple matter. Once you accept a king upon yourself, som tasim alecha melech, tehei emoso alecha. You're going to have to accept his rule. You cannot undermine him. If you do, you're guilty of rebellion against the king. And then the Gemara presents a machlokas tanoim, which is identical to this machlokas between Shmuel and Rav. And that's called kitanoi. And we've seen that all over Shas, that sometimes we have a Gemara which records machlokas amoraim, and then the Gemara shows and demonstrates that it's really a machlokas tanoim. Now this Braisa records a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi reflects the same shvishita that we saw in Shmuel, melech mutarbo. This is the way a king can act, and these are the rights that he can implement, l'chatchila, and that's fine. Rabbi Yehuda, again, the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, reflects the shita that we saw earlier in Rav, that Shmuel HaNavi was only kedei la'ayim aleihem. Then what we saw, which was absolutely fascinating, that Rabbi Yehuda adds another piece to the puzzle. And he goes off on what seems to be a tangent. We'll try to see if we can find the connection. But he says that there are three basic mitzvos that the Jewish people are obligated in. And at what point do they become obligated in these three mitzvos?
When they enter
into the land. Excellent. The first on the list is to appoint a king. And the second on the list is to destroy Zera Amalek. And the third on the list is to build the Beis HaMikdash. Now at the end of this long brisa, Rav Nahoroi is quoted as saying, Lo nemra parsha zu elikig neged taru masam. In other words, the Jewish people came to complain. God already in Parsha Shoftim in Sefer Dvarim already foresaw that this was going to happen later on in the history of the Jewish people. So he established already in Chumash a mitzvah of appointing a king, but he already foretold that Kitavo el Aretz, what's going to happen is Amarta Asimo Alai Melech Kechol HaGoyim, that the Jewish people are going to come forward and they're going to request the king like all the other nations. It's not, says Rav Noroi, a mitzvah. It's just keneged tarumasam, as if God, so to speak, placates the Jewish people. He kowtows to their demands. He doesn't really want a king. He feels that we have leadership amongst the greats of Israel, the spiritual greats of Israel, the Navi. There's no need for a king. But because the Jewish people come forward with this very angry gripe, and they really want a king so badly, Hashem says, you know what? I'll let you have a king. But that's not a mitzvah. So really, Rav Noroi is disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, "B'sholosh mitzvos nitztavu Yisrael b'knisos l'eretz Yisrael." There are three mitzvahs, the first of which is appointing a king. Not so according to Rav Noroi. There's no mitzvah of appointing a king. A mitzvah means an absolute obligation. There ain't no such thing with regard to a king. The only thing is, Hashem already foresees down the line that the Jews are going to come with this taromes, with this gripe, with this claim. They're going to bang on the desk and they're going to say, we want a king. So Hashem says, then, these are the rules that govern a king. You have to appoint a king and so forth and so on. But according to Rav Noroi, how many mitzvahs are we absolutely obligated in when we enter into the land? Two. Only two. Not three, but two. And the first of that is going to be to destroy Amalek.
I thought you had an agricultural
mitzvah too. Well, the agricultural mitzvahs are going to take a while. I'll tell you why. Because we need what's called Sheva Shekivshu and Sheva Shechilku. It's going to be 14 years before we absolutely settle the land. So Yoshua is going to spend 7 years dedicated to conquering the land, another 7 years to settling the land, and after that, we start planting. Right, now, what's the status of agriculture that they find in the land that was planted by the seven nations? So for that you have to really know a lot more about Zeruim, but I would assume that there might be an issue whether you're chayev in Trumas or Maestros on that which was planted and grew before they conquered the land.
If you conquered the land in 1 year and settled it in 1 year, was the mitzvahs, wasn't an Indian in 14 years regardless
of? I think so, yeah. I think it's a period of time. Right. Now, Rabbi Eliezer is quoted in a Braisa, this was the last thing that we learned on Thursday, as recording a split within the Jewish people. In other words, half of the populace of the Jewish people, perhaps, I'm exaggerating maybe when I say half, but anyway, some representative group was justified in asking for a melech. And the other half was just gripes. They were just wanted to imitate the Goyim. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer in this price is taking sort of a middle compromise shita between the two extremes. We had one extreme was Rabbi Yehudu said that there's an absolute unconditional mitzvah. It's the first mitzvah that we're obligated in when we enter into the land to appoint a king. Rabbi Noroi took the other extreme and he said, no, there is no mitzvah. And Rabbi Eliezer seems to take the middle ground. And he says the following, Zkenim Bador, the elders of the congregation, Shalu Kehogan, they were justified in asking for a king. Why? Because they were saying, and this is a pasuk in Shmuel HaNavi, Tna Lanu Melech Lishaftenu. We want a judge, and we want the king to play that role. And what that means is that if there are evildoers within the nation, then the king he can exercise his powers, we call them executive powers, to implement punishments. And those are far-reaching rights of the king. And that was a justified, shall we say, a pious or a halachic request to appoint a king within the halachic system. But the rank and file citizen, Kilkalu, their request for a king was not justified. It was a violation and an insult to Shmuel HaNavi, and moreover to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if to say, God, you're not able to give the Jewish people, as the nation of Israel, as is a certain viability. We need a king. You know, we're going to tell God how to run the world. Shenemar, And they were the ones who said, again in the parasha Shmuel Anovi, a different formulation, Vayinu gam anachnu kechol ha-goyim u'shvateinu malkeinu v'yotzeh lefaneinu, that we should be like the goyim, we should also have a king. That was Shaloka Hogan. Okay. So that's more or less where we get up to last week. Today, if we can find a place on Daf Chaf Amid Beis, we're going to begin the new week with Tanya, with a Bryce. So let's just see how many lines up it is from the bottom of the Amud. Let's see. I would say it's about halfway down from the top. Let's see if I can give you more of an exact location. Tanya is the first word in the line. You know what? Let's do it this way. The lines get wide. And if you count down the wide lines, I think it's about 10, 11 lines. You'll see the first word in the line is Tanya. Yes? Okay. Tanya, we have a Bryce. So this Bryce is going to again analyze the three mitzvos that we're obligated in when we enter into the land. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shalosh Mitzvos Nitztavu Yisrael B'Knisos La'aretz. Again, the sequence is very important. Number one, Lahamid Lehem Melech. Number two, Lahachriz Zaro Shalamolik. Number three, Livnos Lehem Beis HaBachira. They build a Beis HaMikdash. V'eini Yodea Me'eza Mehem Tchila. How do I know which comes first? So now Rabbi Yossi is going to analyze the psukim at the end of Parshas Bishalach. And there is the mitzvah of appointing a king, and immediately following, the king is going to go out to battle to destroy Amalek. The mitzvah of establishing the Beis HaMikdash is much later, not in Sefer Shmos, but in Sefer Dvarim, in Parshas Re'eh. So let's go through the psukim now in Parshas Bishalach, at the end of Bishalach. It says the following, Ki yad al keis ka, and then milchama l'Hashem ba'amolek midar dar. Now watch what happens here. There's a phrase called keis, which is a short form of kisei, of a throne, and then it says yud hey, which is God. So it sounds like we're talking about the divine throne up in heaven. No. We're talking about the human throne, the king, which is sort of, in a sense, a replica of what goes on in the heavens. How do I know that the word case is a reference to the human king, the throne of a human king? And he says, I have another pasuk, which again has the same word case, which with an aleph at the end is kisei, and that's referring to the throne of Shlomo HaMelech. Shenemar, Pasukim Malachim, Vayeshev Shlomo al Kisei Hashem. Again, it has that phrase, the throne of God, LeMelech, as a king. So he's the human king sitting on literally the throne of God. But the throne is a reference to the human king. And that's number one on the list. Now, what's number two on the list? It says, Milchama Hashem Ba'Amalek. We have to fight a battle to destroy Amalek. And this is a mitzvah of Milchama Amalek. So Rabbi Yossi is not sure about this. He says, "Adayin eini yodea im livnos lehem beis habechira tchila o lahachri zaro shel Amalek tchila." Which comes first, number two or number three, to destroy Amalek or to build the Beis HaMikdash? You know, on the one hand, I would say building the Beis HaMikdash is more pressing, because how could we allow, you know, the Aron Kodesh with the Luchas HaBris that shouldn't be in a permanent resting place? We have to build the Beis HaBechira. But on the other hand, maybe we should be building the Beis HaBechira when we're in a situation of security, where we've destroyed our enemies around us. So Kshu Omer. Now let's look at the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash. This is in Parshas Re'eh, if I'm not mistaken. It says over there, Ve'niach lachem mikol eivechem. If we have a, maybe we can look up the pasuk. I don't know, Steve, if you have a Gemara, if you have a Chumash Dvarim there. I should always keep a Chumash here. Maybe here you'll find one. Yeah, you want to open up to Perek Yud Dalet, Perek Yud Beis, excuse me, in Sefer Dvarim, and see if you can find this. So listen carefully to the sequence of the pasuk. It says, V'niach lochem mikol oyvechem misaviv yishavtem betach, meaning when you have destroyed your enemies around and you're sitting in security, then v'hayam akom asher yivchar Hashem Elokeichem, now you build the Beis HaMikdash after you've achieved menucha and respite from your enemies, after you've destroyed your enemies in the battles against your enemies.
What's
this? This is Pasuk Yud in Perek Yud Beis. So it'll be 12:10. If you can find it, let me know. Okay. Any luck? Oh. Are you in Sefer Dvarim? That's the question. What's it called? Deuteronomy in English? Yeah. Oh, V'niach. This is the part we want to see. Right. There it is. V'niach lachem mikol oyvechem misaviv yishavtem betach. And the next pasuk, which should be pasuk Yud Aleph, I think, v'hayo ha-makom asher yivchar Hashem Elokeichem bo l'shaken shmo sham shama taviu eskol asher anokim mitzav eschem, etc., etc. And that's the Beis HaMikdash. Heavy Omer. So what do we derive from the sequence of these psukim? L'hachriz zaro shalom alik t'chila. Now, where's the historical proof to this? We know that the Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech, but David HaMelech had to prepare the ground for Shlomo HaMelech. And what did he do, David HaMelech? He destroyed Amalek. Who was his Sar Tzava? Yoav, you remember that? And there was a dialogue between David and Yoav after Yoav returned from the victorious battle against Amalek. And David turns to Yoav and he says, wait a minute, you only destroyed the male members of Amalek. What about the female members of Amalek? So Yoav claims his Rebbe, when he was a little boy in Cheder, taught him that it's not Zecher Amalek, but it's Zachar Amalek. Zachar meaning the males. So I understood, says Yoav, that the mitzvah is to destroy the males. I never understood that there was a mitzvah to destroy the females. Vayihiki Yashav HaMelech David Bebeiso Vashem Iniach Lo Misaviv Mikol Oyviv Uksiv. And then it says, Vayomer HaMelech Al Nason HaNavi Re'ei Na Anochi Yoshev Bebeis HaRozim. David claims, I'm sitting in a beautiful palace. The Aron Elokim, I'm reading the end of the Pasuk, Yoshev Besoch HaYiriyah. And the Aron that houses the Luchos HaBris with the Kruvim on top is sitting in a tent, you know, with a temporary kind of covering. But it turns out that David HaMelech made this statement and transmitted this communication to Nosan HaNavi that it's time to build the Beis HaMikdash only after Ki Yashav David HaMelech Beis of Hashem Hiniach Lo Misaviv Mikol Oyviv. It was only after David defeated his enemies. Rabbi Moshe, the Pella of this Gemara, I'm just telling you, just on a textual basis, it's a difficult piece, this Gemara, because the Gemara twice quotes a pasuk that says v'niach lachem mikol oyvechem, or in David HaMelech it says v'niach lo misaviv mikol oyvav, and the Gemara assumes that it's a reference to Amalek. I mean, it doesn't say Amalek. We had many enemies, unfortunately. We were surrounded by adversaries, and yet the Torah goes out of its way to say mikol oyvecha, all your enemies, and yet the Gemara somehow whittles it down and focuses on Amalek. So that's a question that we'll take up Lineda if we can tomorrow at 10:30. Okay. Now we have a whole Gemara here, and I got it about Shlomo HaMelech, right? We just finished proving that the Kisei of Hashem is the throne of the king, and we proved it from Elohim, which was a reference to Shlomo HaMelech. So once the Gemara quotes that pasuk in Malachim, the Gemara now gives us an agadic insight into that pasuk. Now this Gemara that we're about to embark upon is a little bit on the sad side, because in our minds, you know, Shlomo HaMelech was one of the greats, but we'll see that it's not so simple. Amar Eish Lakish, b'tchila, initially, this was when Shlomo HaMelech was crowned as king, and he had not yet violated the prohibition of marrying non-Jewish women. Is Molach Shlomo, the malchus, the kingship of Shlomo was so great It wasn't limited to the tachtonim, what we call the human sphere, but it even encompassed halyonim, even the divine sphere, even the malachim in Shamayim. Sheremar Vayeshev Shlomo al Kisei Hashem. And the phrase Kisei Hashem means that Shlomo had a throne in which he sat upon the Kisei of Hashem, meaning even in the spheres, the celestial spheres of the angels. That's how great Shlomo was before this entire change in his spiritual status. Ulabasof, after he married these women, Molach ala tachtonim, he was only a king down here on earth. He completely lost, he forfeited his malchus up in Shamayim. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Ki hu rodeh, he controls, Bechol evra anar. And again, the boundaries that the Pasuk is going to mention are down here on earth. Mitifsach viad Aza. These are places down on the ground. And the Gemara is deriving from this, Reish Lakish, to exclude up in Shamayim. Now, we're going to now understand what these words Mitifsach viad Aza mean. Nechleku, we have a machlokas here between Rav and Shmuel. Chad Omar Tifsach Besofa Olam V'Aza Besofa Olam. These are two locations that are on the ends, the extreme ends of the earth. Let's imagine, for argument's sake, just to make life easy for ourselves, that the earth is flat. Right? So if you had a map of the entire globe, what you would find was in this flat map that on the western side you would have Tifsach, and on the eastern side you'd have Aza. And the Pasuk is indicating that Shlomo HaMelech had control. He was the sovereign monarch over the entire globe. That's according to one opinion. V'chad Omer, the second opinion is Tifsach V'Aza Bahadi Adodi HaVyasvu. These were two places that were immediately contiguous, one to the other. U'keshem Shemolach Al Tifsach V'Al Aza Kach Molach Al Kol HaOlam Kulam. And the Torah is telling us, the Tanakh, that just like he reigned over these two places called Tifsach and Aza, so too he was rode there, the Pasuk says, Bechol Eivr HaNor. In other words, Kol Eivr HaNor means anything on the other side of the water bodies, which means the entire world. So just like he ruled over Tifsach and Aza, you could say that if Tifsach and Aza are two places that are next to each other, then if you draw a line to the right and the line to the left, and they go all around the world, so Shlomo Melech's reign controlled and encompassed the entire world. So again, Shlomo Melech, although at this level he's no longer the great monarch up in Shamayim, he doesn't have the level of Molach Al HaElyonim Al Kisei Hashem, but nevertheless he still controls the entire world. But then he goes down another level. Ulubasof, after he continues in his ways to marry these non-Jewish women, Lo Molach Ela Al Yisrael, he only controls the people of Israel. Shenemar, this is already towards the end of his life, Shlomo writes a work called Koheles, Ani Koheles HaYisi Melech Al Yisrael. He no longer has control over the nations of the world. And then Ulubasof, and now we're going to refer to another pasuk in also in Koheles, Lo Molach Ela Al Yerushalayim. Now it's interesting because the first pasuk actually appears later in Koheles, in the same chapter, but a little bit later on. But I guess we're learning Ein Mukdum U'Meuchar. So the pasuk that we're reading now comes historically or chronologically a little bit later than the pasuk that comes later. So we're changing the chronology in terms of the sequence of the psukim. So the pasuk that we have here at the very beginning of Koheles indicates the next stage in Shlomo going down lower on the scale. And that's Divrei Koheles ben David Molach, or Melech, B'Yerushalayim. He doesn't even have control over all of Yisrael. So again, the first level is Molach, not only on the Tachtonim, but even on the Elyonim. Second level is Molach al Sofolam, on the Tachtonim and only on the Tachtonim. The third level is he's a Melech only on Yisrael. And the fourth level is he's only a Melech on Yerushalayim. Divrei Koheles ben David Melech b'Yerushalayim. Lebasof, now we get to the next level. Lo Molach Ela al Mitoso, which basically means that he only controls his own self. He has no power. He doesn't have sovereign rulership even over the city of Jerusalem. He named Mitoso Shel Shlomo. Now we're in Shir HaShirim, and only on his Mita does he have control. Again, the Mita symbolizes his own self, his own personal behavior. Ulebasof, at the end, Lo Molach Ela al Maklo, he only has a kingship over his makel, over his staff. And we're going to soon see that the word staff, makel, is symbolic of one of two things. That's going to be, again, a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Now here we have to know a Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin tells us that there was a demon, by the name of Ashmedai. And Ashmedai took away the ring, the sovereign, the monarchical ring of Shlomo Melech. And apparently he threw it, Arba Meos Pars. I think you have to learn the Gemara Gittin, that's another agadita for us, but the bottom line is that Ashmedai now intervenes and basically completely undermines Shlomo's Malchus. What's left is Maklo. And where do we see this again? Apostle King Koheles, V'zeh hayach chelki mikol amoli. Then I'm left with nothing but my staff. And what is the symbolism of the staff? So Rav Shmuel, they have two opinions exactly what this V'zeh hayach chelki mikol amoli means. Chad omar maklo. According to one opinion, makel. So the Mefarshim explained that the Makil represents something inexpensive. In other words, he doesn't have any possessions. Here, Shlomo Melech was considered the richest person in the world. Now he's left with a staff. The Chan Omar Gundo. And others say, whether it's Rav Shmuel, we don't know, that he's left with the shirt on his back. That's all he has, Gundo. Gundo means Bigdo, his beged. Now I have here a footnote or two that I wanted to share with you in the Masifta. He quotes, first of all, the Marsha says that the symbolism of a makil throughout Tanakh is when you're left with very little in your possession. Like by Yaakov Avinu, it says, Ki v'makli avarti yasei ardena zeh. But more important, I want to share with you, is the insight of the Ben Yehoyada. He was the Ben Ish Chai, and he wrote a magnum opus on Agadah. You know, it's very, very challenging for us to learn and understand the Agadah, so he helps us out. He says the following. When did these stages actually take place? He says, one thing we know for sure, that from the time that he took over the reign of Malchus, up until the time that Ashmedai took away his ring, his signet, he says, "Lo mardu bo shivtei Yisrael." The tribes of Israel were still loyal to Shlomo HaMelech. So again, during this entire period of time, which stretches from Shlomo being in control of even the heavens and the Malachim up in Shemayim until he's left with nothing, the Shivtei Yisrael are still loyal to him. So how do we have to understand that he only has kingship over Yerushalayim? I mean, Yerushalayim doesn't represent the Shivtei Yisrael. And what does it mean that Shlomo was a Melech al Mitoso? When did that happen? If again the Shivtei Yisrael was still loyal to him as the king. And furthermore, he says, if you take a look at the psukim inside, it's explicit that Shlomo HaMelech was the king over Yisrael for 40 years. And then it says after the 40 years, Molach al Yisrael Avroim Shana, Vishakav Aim Avosav. He immediately died after this 40-year period. I think he was 52 when he died, if I remember correctly. So he became king at a young age. He controlled all of Yisrael for 40 years. How can you tell me that after Yisrael he was only on Yerushalayim, and then after it was only on Mitoso, and then all he has is the Makil? So he has a number of questions. And he says the following: Bevadai, there's no question, Shem Hamalchu Shahoyolo Alakolo Posak. The Gemara doesn't mean to say that he ceased to be a melech. Akvod Malchus, so Vehod Malchus, Shahoyolo Mikodem Posku. He says that the glory of the king, the respect, the admiration that Shlomo initially had, was terminated over the course, gradually declining over the course of time. He says initially Mikodem he had Hod Malchus B'chol HaOlam. Later on he had Hod Malchus only on Yisrael. And not only that, at some point that respect and glory that they had for Shlomo Melech was only limited to Yerushalayim, and Klal Yisrael didn't have that amazing glory, you know, glorious perspective or the grandiose image of Shlomo Melech. And at this point in time, only in Yerushalayim, Nireh Hod VeHadar Malchuso. Then even amongst the settlers of Yerushalayim, the dwellers of Yerushalayim, he lost that Hod VeHadar. All he's left with is Mitoso. What does Mitoso mean? Klapei Noshav. Wow, only the women folk that he was married to had this admiration, they looked up to him. Vinira Lomar, he says, Ki hoya etzel kol ha-melochim mora malchus mishlomo bavur chochmoso, sha-kol lomdu dvara, fi'al mora v'kovid malchus shahoyelo avur chochmoso, dibrukan she-posku v'yardu at-at. He suggests not only the kvod v'hoda, the respect that Shlomo commanded amongst the Jewish nation, but moreover amongst the nations of the world and even amongst the kings of the world, they had a fear and an awe of his kingship. They knew about his chachma, they appreciated that he was the wisest of all men, they used to study his works, and they used to learn from him. And our Gemara is telling us that this Mora V'Kavod of the Malche Ha'umos gradually declined. It receded stage by stage, La'at La'at. Mitchila initially, Bo Mikol Ha'olam Lishmo Divrei Chochmaso. All the peoples of the world would come, they would gravitate towards Shlomo to hear and learn from his pearls of wisdom. Yachach Rak Mi Yisrael, only Jewish people came to learn from Shlomo Melech. V'achakach, in the next stage, only Yerushalayim people came. They lived close proximity. They had the covet for him. They would come to soak up his knowledge and his wisdom. V'achakach, and then on the next stage, he says, Hayelo kvod malchus mitzad chochmaso rak etzel ha'omdim liyad mitoso. So the word mitoso is referenced to people who are in very close proximity to him. They had respect for him. They wanted to learn from his wisdom. V'shamu v'lomdu menu divrei chok v'achakach ba ashmadoi. Then in the final stage, the demon Ashmadai comes with Tardo, and he undermines, he uproots Shlomo Melech. Lo nosa lo kavod ki im mitzad maklo. What does it mean the kavod that he has is his makel? Shehayav tofes biyodo makel, he would hold on to his staff. Vikorei, and he would declare, Ani Koheles. I am Koheles. I am the wise king. Misha Hemin Ludvarov, anyone who believed in him, his Mino Etzlo, Shlomo would be Makar of him, would bring him in and invite him inside the palace. The Kibdo, and these people who came in response to that invitation, they honored Shlomo Melech Bavur Chachmasa because of his knowledge. Kihi Notralo, the Ace Maklo. What he was left with when he grabbed onto his staff was nothing other than his wisdom, his chachmah. Ukfar lo hoya keser malchus berosho. I don't know if he means this literally or symbolically. He was no longer wearing the royal the royal, what's it called in English, a keser, a crown. He was no longer crowned as king. And this is a whole new interpretation of our Gemara. Now, as we thought that our Gemara is simply referring to Malchus and control over the people, the Ben Yoyada can't accept that because he has many psukim that indicated that he was still a melech for 40 years until his death. But the answer is the respect that he got from the people, first and foremost from the kings of the and the nations of the world, and secondly from the Israelites themselves. All this was on the decline until finally what was left with just his makel, and that's as a result of Ashmedai. Now the question is the following. Is this the situation, is this the state of being in which Shlomo Melech leaves this world? Was there any, in a sense, replacement of his status? Did at some point the curve go the other way and started, after it reached its bottom barrel, it went up? So in the Gemara's language, that's called Hadar o lo Hadar. Was there at any point that Shlomo Melech went back to again reclaim his malchus, his stature as the king? Again, according to the Ben Yod, it means the respect of Hod v'Hod malchus. And this again is a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel are really at each other today. Chad Omar Hodar, according to one opinion, Shlomo went back to being a melech at the end of his life. V'chad Omar Lo Hodar. And according to another opinion, the situation, the sad situation that we've described, is exactly as Shlomo went to his death. Man diomer lo hadar, melech hejot, melech vehejot. In other words, according to one man diomer, he did not return to his status as a melech. He was a melech initially, and then he was a hejot. He was like any other person. He had no control. Nobody paid any attention to him. Again, the Ben Yodiyot has a problem with this, as we said before. Umandi Omar Hadar, according to another opinion, Melech, Uhejot, Umelech. There were three periods in Shlomo's life. He was the king, he went down to the lowest level of being a Hejot, a regular citizen, but then at the end of his life, he went back to being a king once again. Now, Rav Hai Goen says the following, Hakavona Leklisha Bo Shosim Mayim. Okay. Fine. All right, we'll leave that out for now. That's not so important to me. But what comes later is that the Gaon wants to say that at the end of his life, Shlomo HaMelech is left with his makel or his gundo. This is a remez to two great accomplishments of Shlomo HaMelech during his lifetime. I don't know if you're familiar with this. This is a Gemara in Erevin. Shlomo HaMelech established two major takonos d'rabbanan. One was Netilas Yadayim, that before we eat bread, we wash our hands. And that's a Gzeirah Atu Shnias Latuma. And then he made another important Gzeirah, the enactment of an Erev. Maklo, says the Gaon, is a remez on the Erev. Why? Because when we want to set up an Erev, which will allow us to carry within an expanded area, we put up maklos. Again, there are all sorts of laws about how, you know, you distance one makel from the other with lovud and all sorts of dinim. But that's the makel here. Says the Gaon, this makel is symbolic of the Erev. And then he says that gondo is actually, based on the Rav Haigon that I mentioned before, is a kli shebo rochatzim imenu. In other words, we put water into a receptacle, we use it to wash our hands, and that's a symbolic reference to Netil Siddayim. So according to the Gaon, what Shlomo HaMelech leaves behind, his legacy, his great contribution, are these two takonos of Eruv and Netil Siddayim. Now the Marshal here says that when it says in the Gemara that according to one man, the Omar lo hadar, he never got back to, you know, back on the horse to be the king, according to the Marshal, there's another girsa here. We don't have in our Gemara the correct text. The correct text should read, Vishuv lo chazar limalchuso. And the Marshal says that what does it mean, limalchuso? It means limalchuso al ha elyonim. That he never went back to control the heavenly spheres, meaning the Malach HaShores. And again, this Marshal would reflect what we saw before the Ben Ish Chai, that it can't be that he never went back to being a Melech. The Tanakh testifies that he was a Melech until the day of his death. But rather, we're not referring to Malchus, but Kvod Malchus. The Kvod Malchus, the glory and the honor that he got because of his wisdom, was that reappreciated at the end of his life. So again, according to one Man D'Omer, he was never appreciated again, like he was initially in terms of his Chachma and Kvod V'Adar Malchus. And the Gir says, Shuv Lo Chazal Malchuso Al Hel Yonim, on the upper spheres. Now, why did the Gemara have to point out Melech V'Hejot? And then, according to one Man D'Omer, Melech, Hejot, and Melech. We already clarified that there's a machlokas here whether it was Chazal Malchuso or not. So what was the emphasis here on Hejot? Molach, he was a Melech, and then Hejot, he became a regular rank and file citizen. So he says the following, Bo lomar shebehejotoso lohoya Melech klal af lo al miktas Malchuso kigon Yushalayim bilvad. The Gemara wants to emphasize with the word Hejot that he didn't have any status whatsoever. You could have a Melech that has sovereign rulership over a large area in the world, and then you could have a Melech that only has a limited Malchus, a limited control over the world. He didn't have any control whatsoever. Again, this is not with the Ben Ish Chai, but with the other commentaries. Now we can take a look on Daf Chaf Aleph Amin Beis, and once we get to the Mishnah, we're finished with this Agadita. It says in the pasuk, "Vayimshachu Lashem l'nagid u'litzadok." Now, this pasuk is referring in Divrei Hayomim to the Kohen Gadol. So, in other words, the first part of the pasuk, "Vayimshachu Lashem l'nagid," is a reference to Shlomo HaMelech. But then it says, Ulitzadok leKohen, and there was also Mashicha, in which they anointed Tzadok as the Kohen Gadol. Now, what the Gemara wants to understand is why does the same pasuk from the Reisha to the Seifa connect Shlomo's Mashicha as Melech with that of Tzadok as the Kohen? And the Gemara answers: Makish Nagid leTzadok. There's a hekesh here between the sovereign rulership of Shlomo HaMelech and the status of Tzadok as the Kohen Gadol. Not Tzadok, just like Tzadok, who's the Kohen Gadol. He gets half of the Lechem upon him, we'll explain this in a minute, and therefore, Mechtzalo, Mechtzaliechov, so there are the Kohenim of the Mishmar who are on duty on that week, they would get half of the lechem upon him. Let's say there's 12 showbreads, they would get 6 out of 12. And Tzadok HaKohen, as the Kohen Gadol, had rights to the other half. And this is going to shed a light on the monetary rights of the king when they go out to battle. Af Nugget, so to the king, he also gets half. Mechtzalo Mechtzaliechov. It means when Klal Yisrael go out to battle and they take booty, so the financial benefits from that conquest, that victorious military campaign, will now be divided up equally between the Melech and the people. And this we saw in the Mishnah. And the Melech, by getting 50, is not feeding his own personal bank account. He's feeding the treasury of the people. Now, what's the deal with Lechem Aponim? So in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a Shulchan that was in the Lifnim, that was in the Kodesh. And on the Shulchan, on a weekly basis, they stacked 12 chalos that are called Lechem Aponim. And every Shabbos, they would take out the last week's Lechem Aponim and replace it with the new fresh Lechem Aponim. Last week's Lechem Aponim was divvied up amongst the Kohanim. And the Gemara says that in this division, the Kohen Gadol would get half of the Lechem Aponim. So the Gemara now wants to bring a source How do we know, where in the Torah does it say that the Kohen Gadol gets half of the lechem upon him, so that we can now make the equation with regard to the biza, that the melech gets half of the biza? So if it's tzadik gufei minolin, how do you know the Kohen Gadol gets half of the lechem upon him? The sanya we learned in the Braisa, Rebbe Omer, and now he's darshaning a pasuk in Emor, and Parshas Emor it says, with regard to the division of the lechem upon him, it says, v'yisol aron ulebanov. It means that Aaron and Bonov are on the same equal level. Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, and Bonov represents the other Kohanim. Mechtzol Aaron u'mechtzol Bonov. They divvy it up equally. And now we're up to the new Mishnah, and we're going to talk about the Melech. The Melech has various mitzvos and various isurim that are unique to the king. So I'm going to read to you the Psukim in Parshas Shoftim. It says the following: Rak lo yarbo lo susim. He's not allowed to have too many horses. Lo yoshiv esal Mitzrayim. He's not allowed to take the people back to Mitzrayim. And lo yarbo lo noshim. He's not allowed to get married to too many women. And then the Torah says, this is very important for us, velo yosur levavo. Now I'm going to translate it in the following way. He shouldn't marry too many women, because if he does so, they're going to distract him to the point in which he'll deviate from his total focus on serving Hashem and his dedication and loyalty to the people. Once he gets distracted with all these wives, again we have to figure out how many wives and who are these women, then lo yosel levavo, they will cause him to be meser lev, meaning to go off the right straight path. Then the pasuk says, kesef is ahav lo yarav lo miod, he shouldn't have too much silver and gold. So again, let's just summarize. Number one, he's not allowed to have too many horses. Number two, too many wives. Number three, too much money, monetary possessions. So the Mishnah wants to know, when the Torah says lo yarav lo noshim, how many wives would he take, and he's legally licensed to do so, and at what point did he overstep his bounds and he violated the prohibition of lo yarav lo noshim? So here we're going to have a machlokas. We're going to start with the Tana Kama, and the Tana Kama says Ela Shmonesre, he's allowed to marry up to 18 wives, but not more than 18. Who are these women? Are they low class women, high class women? Are they tzadekos? So The Tana Kama doesn't make any distinction whatsoever. There seems to be, according to Tana Kama, an absolute rule. He can marry up to 18 and not beyond. Because, why do I make this point? Because if the whole purpose of the Torah is lo yosur levavo, that if he marries too many women, they'll cause him, they'll entice him to violate the Torah and all his great, not to fulfill his great responsibilities as the king, then presumably, if he would marry 18 women, each one of which is a great tzaddikus, he'd marry the 18 most pious women in the country, why would that cause him to lo yosu levavo? Apparently, the Tana Kama, at least, and we'll see as we go along if everyone accepts this, splits between the first part of the pasuk and the second part of the pasuk. The pasuk says lo yarbo lo noshim, period. And that those four words have to be understood as a separate independent entity, and tells him he cannot marry 18 wives, period. Then it's below Yosef Levavo. We'll read that as a separate discussion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Marbahulo. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he can marry as many women as he wants, but there's only one proviso. Ubilvad shalo yu misiros es libo mitoras Hashem. Who are these women? He's allowed to marry as many women as he wants, as long as these are upstanding women that will guide him in the right path. But if he's going to marry women who are meisiros es libo, and we'll see, in other words, what kind of women would come from such a background that they are, in a sense, evil influences, destructive and corruptive influences on the king. Those women he has to be very careful about. He may think that he's a big shot and he can marry such women, but the Torah says, lo yarav lo noshim lo yosu levavo. So if the lo yasil levavo is describing the category of the women, what is the nature of the women, what are their personalities and their character that the Torah prohibits you from marrying so many of them? And this iser of marrying too many of them only applies to nashim hasuyos lahasir slivo. Do you follow this? In other words, the lo yasil levavo is going to shed a light and describe and restrict those women who are in the ratio of this pasuk, that lo yarbo lo noshim, he's not allowed to marry too many of them. And Rabbi Shimon says, I don't understand, the logic doesn't make any sense. Why? Afilu achas. If he marries one rotten apple, you know, she's going to have an evil influence on him, corruptive influence. Mesiras limo. Hareza lo yisena, for sure we're not going to allow him to marry such a woman. So what do you mean, Rabbi Yehuda, when you say that if you have 18 women who fit this category called Mesiros es Limo, he's not allowed to marry all 18 of them? Says Rav Shimon, I wouldn't allow him to marry even one of them.
They have to be Jewish.
Obviously they have to be Jewish, right? That's not an issue. But they might be Mesiros es Limo. And Rav Yehuda says, if you have, let's say the populace is made up of two groups. There are the good women, and then there are Mesiros es Limo women. So within the category of Mesiros es Limo, Rav Yehuda says he's allowed to marry 18 of them. So if Shimon yells and screams, he says, how could that be? Even if he wants to marry one woman who is Mesiros Libo, she said, you know, you're going to have that dominant personality in which she'll influence him in the Hasaras Libo direction, he's not allowed to marry her.
It would seem that though from the Mishnah, that it could be that 18 could be Mesiros Libo.
Oh, so that's Rav Shimon in the next line. Let's just finish the. I saw he took a deep breath in the middle of Rav Shimon. He says, why does the Torah say he's not allowed to marry many women? If it's a woman who's made serious asleep, he shouldn't even marry one of them. And if it's tzadikos, then let him marry as many as he wants. No. Says Rav Shimon, what does it mean, lo yarba lo noshim? Da filu ka avigayel. Abigail was the wife of David Amel, who was a great tzaddikus. He's not allowed to marry more than 18. So again, if he's marrying a woman who's Mesiros es Libo, she fits into that category, he's not allowed to marry even one of them, says Rav Shimon. What about tzaddikos? Like Abigail? He can marry up to, but not beyond 18. So let's just go over the machlokus now between Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Shimon. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he's allowed to marry as many Avigails as he wants to marry. He can marry 1,000 Avigails. That's not a problem. When the Torah says he can't marry 18 women, it's referring to 18 women who fit the category of Hasoras Eslivo, Hasuyos Lahasir Eslivo. Rabbi Shimon says that makes no sense, because if it's Hasuyos Lahasir Eslivo, the Torah would not permit you to marry 18. The Torah wouldn't even permit you to marry one such a woman. The king has to be very careful about Hasoras Eslivo. He's got to be totally focused and loyal and dedicated to the people. However, if he's marrying Avigails, that's a good thing, but up to 18, not beyond 18, even 18 Avigails will somehow distract him. So I have a footnote here that summarizes the machlokes. He's Nimtza, Shrav Yehuda, Matir lo lose shmones rei noshim she'enon ksheros. In other words, we don't know that they're ksheros. And Asuyos lahasiris limo. If we don't know them, if they haven't established themselves to be ksheros, then there's a very heavy statistical probability that they'll be mesiris limo. If it's tzedkanios, meaning there's a chazok about this woman that she's tzedekis, mutal afilu yosel, Rav Shimon, mutal shmonas reynoshim, she'eno masiros es libo. But if it's a woman that we don't know, let's say we don't know the nature of this woman, maybe she's a Risha, she hasn't proven her character yet, is she's asuyos lahasiris libo. There's a possibility that she might distract him and he might deviate from the right path. It's asuyos lo klal, he can't marry even one of them. So what I shared with you now in this footnote is from the Yad HaRamah. The Yad HaRamah, as I've mentioned a million and one times, is the most significant commentator on Masechta Sanhedrin. And he sort of, shall I say, whittles down, or what word am I looking for? He neutralizes the extreme position of Rabbi Yehuda as we understood it. We thought Rabbi Yehuda was saying that you have women that you know are in the category of Mesiris Eslibo, and Rav Yehuda is going to allow the king to marry up to 18 of them. That's not so, according to Yad Ramah. The Yad Ramah also cannot tolerate Rav Yehuda on a straightforward level. He reinterprets Rav Yehuda. What Rav Yehuda is referring to is women who are asuyos lahasir eslibo. They might possibly be so. They haven't proven themselves to be ksheros v'tzidkanios. On the other hand, we don't know that there are shams. If, let's say, we have a woman and we know that she's an evil woman, then even Rabbi Yehuda would say, "Now the king is not allowed to marry such a woman." The machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon revolves around a woman who's unknown. Let's call her a joker card, right? She hasn't been mukzakos kiksheira. She hasn't mukzakos kirishah. She's neither here nor there. That's very suspicious. And Rabbi Shimon says, we don't want to take any chances with the Melech. The Torah is not going to allow him to marry one of those. Rabbi Yehuda says, look, she has no criminal record. She doesn't have any chazok as a Rishah. And therefore, he's allowed to marry her. But since, you know, statistically, out of a group of 18, you know, it might turn out that at least one of them is a Marshas. So therefore, he should avoid marrying.
That was a Shlomo Melech Cheshbon. He married 70 of each of the Amos. So it was for the sake of the Amos.
Right, but that wasn't acceptable. And therefore, Shlomo Melech went down and down and down. Alright, we only have 5 minutes left. Let's just quickly get a head start on the Gemara. So Belineta tomorrow, we'll move into this Gemara. The Mishnah already told us that according to Rabbi Yehuda, when the Torah says lo yarvo lo noshim, and you're not allowed to marry more than 18 wives, that's not an absolute prohibition, but rather it only applies if there's a serious possibility that this woman or any of these 18 women might be mesiros eslibo. So the Gemara is going to say now lemeimra de Rabbi Yehuda darish time of the krod. There's a gigantic machlokes all over Shas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon as to whether Daishinon time of the Krah or not. Are we allowed to look into the meaning or the reasons that underline a mitzvah or a prohibition, and based on our understanding of the reasoning behind a mitzvah, come to some sort of halachic conclusion and reinterpret the mitzvah based on this time of the Krah? And it would seem in our Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who's Doresh time of the Krah. Why? Because he doesn't have an absolute Isur, do not marry, again I'm talking about the king, 18, more than 18 women. No. He's gonna take a deep breath. He's gonna read the Pasuk Lo Yarbo Lo Noshim together with Lo Yasir Levama. And he's gonna say, what kind of Noshim is the Torah talking about? It's talking about Yasir Levama Dika Noshim. Only those women which fit into that category that they may very well, or they may likely to be Mesir Slibo, that's where the Torah prohibited him from getting married. Rav Shimon, on the other hand, Lo Darish time in the Krah. He says the Torah says, Lo Yarvo Lo Noshim. I have to take the Torah at its face value, and I can't reinterpret it in the light of my understanding and my rationale. And therefore, under no circumstances whatsoever will we allow a king to marry more than 10 women. They could be as great as Abigail, Ashes David, who was a great tzaddikess. The Gemara Megillah says that she was one of the 7 Nevios for Yisrael. Nevertheless, he's not allowed to marry more than 18 wives. And this is what the Gemara calls her Ipcha Shaminan Lehu. This is the exact opposite of what we know from all of Ashas. All of Ashas, it's Rabbi Shimon who's the one who is Doresh time of the Krah, whereas Rabbi Yehuda refuses to Doresh time of the Krah. No, it's Rabbi Shimon who's willing to reinterpret a mitzvah and define its parameters based on time of the Krah, based on what he believes is the reason behind the mitzvah. And we're going to learn now about this concept of a mashkon, right? So the Torah says that if you lend money to a widow and you want to take a mashkon from her, then what's going to happen is that that in many cases she goes in and out of his house in order to retrieve her mashkon. Let's say, for example, the mashkon is something that she needs at night. You know, it's a warm garment that she needs to warm herself up in the cold night. So Rav Shimon is going to say that if she's a poor widow, and therefore she's going to come in and out of his house, that's something that could be humiliating to her, which we'll discuss tomorrow why it might be humiliating that every night she has to come back to get her mashkon from him. But if on the other hand she's an ashira, she's a wealthy woman, then Rav Shimon says we don't have anything to worry about. She's not going to come on a daily basis, you know, every night knocking on his door to get back her mashkon, and you're allowed to take a mashkon from her. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is going to say the Torah says lotachbol beged almana, the Torah prohibits us from taking a mashkon from an almana, and the Torah doesn't differentiate between a rich almana and a poor almana. So Rabbi Yehuda is the one who rejects time in the Krah, and Rabbi Shimon is the one who accepts time in the Krah. That's just the opposite of what we see here in our Mishnah about lo yar belo lo nosh. Okay then, so B'li Neder, we'll talk about the Darshin and time of the Krah, low Darshin and time of the Krah tomorrow. That's going to be our subject.